Welcome to edition number two of 100% Canucks. I'm John Shannon, joined in Vancouver by Landon Ferraro. Landon, you had a great experience the last couple of weeks to be around that championship team, the Calder Cup champion Abbotsford Canucks. What was that like?
Honestly, it was amazing. Getting to get, I did a couple games early in the year and then popped in for a couple playoffs, but finished the conference finals against Texas and then got to do the whole finals with them. And being around that group, it was, I think the word I'd go with was impressed. Like, I was impressed multiple times how resilient that group was, but how incredibly tight they were and how they played for each other. It was pretty amazing watching them, conduct their business and deal with pressure and keep meeting it every single time.
How about the crowd in Abbotsford?
It was unbelievable. I mean, I played against them when it was the old Abbotsford Heat and they were not getting those. We had a double OT where it was basically friends and family in the stands. And then, to have them there, I got my headphones on and I could barely hear Brandon Astle. The play-by-play was so loud. It was awesome to see.
So what made that team so good on the ice? Who were the players that stood out for you as the team worked its way through the five series, which is absolutely phenomenal when you think about it, the five series of the American League playoffs?
Well, I mean, up front, it was the guys that you'd really want and expect to be really showing up. Linus Karlsson, Max Sasson, and Archdeep Baines, along with Sammy Blais, were kind of the catalysts up front. But, Karlsson, especially like in the kind of second half of each series, when he really figured out how to play against the other team, his level would take another massive step and he'd start putting the puck in the net and, his board battles, the way that he sees the ice. I feel like from where he was at the end of the season in Vancouver and kind of something clicked for him there where he's, he's so good around the net, but he was able to go back to the American League and not just, keep that up, but really trying to keep pushing his envelope as well, knowing how big of this run is for him trying to make the team in Vancouver next year. It was really impressive. And, Max Sasson, his speed, especially through the neutral zone as a puck carrier, was like, it was a bit more eye-opening than I thought it was going to be. I knew he was a fast player, but, his second efforts all over the ice, like I put him a lot to Manny Malhotra. Mm-hmm. He might have some better hands here and there, but
don't tell that to Manny. Don't tell Manny that.
Oh, I made sure to tell him a couple times and he loved it every time because he could see the same thing where like Max does not give up on a puck anywhere on the ice. He's always got his nose in the middle of everything and he knows how to use his skill to complement his line mates. And that's why that trio was so good. But, on the back end, Willanen was very good. I think the biggest surprise for everyone, especially that haven't been watching all year, was Kirill Kudryavtsev. He took his first minus in a game, like to finish as a minus player. I believe it was game one of the finals. Mm-hmm. It'd been 32 games since he had a minus. Like, you can say what you want about that stat, but to be that consistent, especially in your first year, was quite an accomplishment. But he reads the play really well. He's unbelievable with his stick, getting it in lanes while he's accepting a rush. He's breaking stuff up, smacking it off guys' tape. But then you could see the confidence building and jumping up into the ice, up into the neutral zone as well. And then, of course, to finish with Shelovs was, he was everything they needed and more. Abbotsford had a tough time starting games. And he was the one that was a calming presence throughout to give them enough time to get their feet back under him. And then they just kind of keep chugging away and they get themselves back into games consistently.
So the key thing for Shelovs was to go to the American League and work hard. But let's face it, when he was at the NHL level, he had holes.
Yeah.
Has he filled the holes?
I think he's filled quite a bit of them. I think, he's clearly shown that he can rise to really big occasions, whether it's the World Championships, jumping into the NHL playoffs, like he can rise to those levels. But for, you know, for a lot of even just young players in general, but goalies especially, finding how to be consistent through the grind of a season, like that's the hardest part. And him working with Justin Pogge, the Abbotsford goaltending coach, you know, they've really worked on kind of really trying to get him steady in the net, not over sliding on things. He's so athletic that, you know, he'd go all out for everything, but you need to have a bit of calmness. You need to be able to, you know, kind of dial yourself in and understand when to let the acrobatics go and when you need to make a desperation save, but you need to have that solid foundation. And when things, especially in game one and two down in Charlotte, like, you know, they were outshot, I believe it was 96-44 in those first two games. And Shelov's looked calm and locked in throughout. Like he was making saves, but he was holding on to them. If they dropped down, he was quick getting to the getting the cover and not letting a rebound happen. Like he looked like all the pieces that you needed to see kind of get picked up when he was in Vancouver. He's done the work to make sure those kind of get back in the bag for him.
Well, and that certainly puts the Canucks in pretty good stead if you think about Thatcher Demko, Kevin Lankinen, and now Artur Shelov as NHL caliber goaltenders, particularly as the big club navigates a summer of change with Adam Foote as the new head coach of the hockey club. And that's who Landon and I will talk to after the break. He was a star for the Colorado Avalanche. He was a star for Canada's Olympic team. And after 2 years as an assistant coach for the Canucks, he's now the bench boss. Adam Foote, head coach of the Vancouver Canucks, on this edition of 100% Canucks. Welcome back to 100% Canucks. Landon Ferraro, I'm John Shannon, joined by Canucks head coach Adam Foote. Adam, what's that sound like? NHL head coach.
You know, it's a great opportunity. Something, you know, Rick gave me an awesome opportunity to join him and, to, you know, for this to happen. It's, I guess I've never really thought about it to ask that question, how it sounds like, but, you know, it's just a great opportunity for me and I'm happy that I can, you know, be in this position.
Better get used to it. when you finished your playing career, and I know you coached in Colorado a bit, but and there are those of us that, you know, we think we've planned our lives from the age of 12. Was this part of the plan to be a head coach?
Well, it was something that I thought about a long time ago. I mean, when I played and towards the end of it, I loved it. I loved the part, you know, especially when I ended up with Ken Hitchcock. I loved hearing his strategy, you know, got a chance to play on those Canadian teams with him. And, you know, you play the Swedes or compared to the Finns or the Czechs and the different, you know, types of ice, whether it's Olympic ice. You know, I really enjoyed his strategy to how he would defend or, you know, try to create off that. I thought he was really good at that part of the game. And, you know, and then when I retired, I simply just wanted to spend a lot more time with my family. And but I kept myself, I guess you'd say, my foot in the door. And, you know, Saka gave me an opportunity as well to be able to do that, you know, once he took over. So it was great. I learned a lot, did a lot of different things. And, you know, and here we are.
So, like, you bring up pitch there, but, like, were you always one of those guys when you were playing of, like, you know, I'd like this about from this coach, what he's doing. I don't like this. Like, is there guys that you've grabbed pieces from, or is there one guy that you try and model yourself after a little bit?
Well, I wouldn't say I probably grabbed pieces from every coach I had. I was, you know, very lucky. I had some really good coaching. You know, and back when I started, it was a little bit different, not just hockey, but our world. And, you know, you have to evolve and learn from that as well, the different ways to communicate with players and things like that. But I would say all of them, of course, learned a lot. But I think the strategy of Hitch I liked was just the playing field, the battlefield. And we don't like to talk about too much about war and things like that.
You're not going to talk about Gettysburg on us, are you?
No, here? I'm not going to do that to you. And, you know, I could tell you a lot of funny stories when I was with Hitch, like about that kind of stuff. But, you know, I really just liked the strategy, like the we're playing this opponent and here's their weapons type thing. Right. And, but I wouldn't say early in my career, I even knew what was going on. You're just trying to play hard and we're young and, you know, you hear people talk about his own defense or man on man or things like that. And, you know, back then we were just playing most of the time, you know, like reading off each other and things like that.
Okay. Based on that, how would you describe your coaching style and how do you interact with the players?
Well, that's a loaded question. The style, you know, pretty much what I just explained, like what's our opponent? You know, I was in a position where I was fortunate and lucky to play against top lines, top players, and they always had strengths, and you know more than one guys like that, right? That obviously they're smart, and whether they were a fast speed heavy player, or they had the shot, or you know the skill set to beat you 1-on-1, or just like some of those guys that you can't touch, like a Palfy and Oates, a Sackick, they'll pass through you. They're not necessarily going to play the odds and not try to beat you if they don't have to. So that was for me, I guess it will relate to coaching where you strategize to not get beat by that team coming in, what they're trying to do to you. You're trying to counter it, you know, be aware of what their strengths are and how they're going to try to beat you and try to, you put that in place, in my opinion, without, you do it the best you can without with your players to give them the confidence that this is going to work. We're going to have success. We're going to be able to survive that type of player. So I would say that would be my style and be prepared with that. But that's such a wide range, right?
Like, sure.
You know, so, and I think it's fun to see those opponents come in and study their game and, you know, obviously we're going to play a certain way. Like, you know, if we do our job, we're going to have success against any type of offense or, you know, any type of defense. If we're on the same page, you know, unit of five, unit, including the goalie, unit of six, we've all heard those kind of things, but it's true. If we're on the same page, we start with our process and you know, believe in that. And we'll be able to stay in control when things get harder.
How would you describe the transition then with the same team from an assistant to the head coach? Not that you've coached any games as the head coach, but it would have to be surely a huge advantage to have been around this roster or most of this roster for the last couple of years.
I think it's an advantage. I mean, with the relationship part and you know, we had success here. Like we had the 50 wins and, you know, and I think for me to jump in and know the strengths and weaknesses of each player or what makes them go, what doesn't, their personalities, things like that. So, and where, what a lot of things we have to continue to keep on working with them. Everyone, you know, you see guys that play a long time in this league, they don't stop working on getting better at what they master. If they have a great shot, they continue to work on that, but they also work on other things to get better, you know, and that's the beauty of pro hockey is those guys play a long time for a reason because they keep working at their game.
Is it tough? Like when you've been running the D for the past couple of years and you're really tight with them and have got that group, especially this past year with the young kids, you know, kind of figuring that out. Like, is it hard? You know, you filled out your staff now. Obviously, you're still in charge, but like letting go of a bit and, you know, like Kevin Dean will be the defense and you bring Brett McLean in as well. Like, is it hard to kind of back off a little bit and let them do their thing while you oversee everything?
It's a great question. Like the D part of it where you said, down there, changing these D, know what ticks and what goes. And we've met as a coaching staff already early this week. And we're going to meet again, obviously. But that's a great question because that was a big part for me was the D coach, like early, right away. Like, yeah, you have to let it go. But, we've already exchanged all our clips. Like, he's got all my clips from last year. And what I liked about Tino is, like, – I'm like, why is Chicago always up there in this PK? I was always thinking, you know, and I liked how they killed. And when you do the PK, you're looking at so much tape, who their five previous games, who their opponents were, things like that. And you know, as I did it more and more and more, there were certain teams I liked to watch their PK, right? Like for playing Anaheim, I like to see three or four teams that I like to go to watch to see what they're doing against because they play more similar to us. But I always liked how Dean had his team coaching penalties and approached it. But more than that is I just liked his demeanor, his calmness, his experience being around Boston for a long time. They know how to win, and his calmness and his presence. I really like that. And I trust him. We're going to have conversation. We're going to look at a lot of tape together and have discussion. We spent a few days just talking and hear how we want to play or what we'd like to see maybe different or we can tweak or and just get to know each other even more. And it was great. So yeah, I'll let him have, we've already talked a little bit about it.
I ran into Brett McLean in Abbotsford when he was watching game five there, and I had him his first 2 years out of playing in Iowa as an assistant coach. And like, one of the things I loved about him so much was like, he could be very blunt, but in a way that you were more than accepting of the message. For bringing him in where now it's his second job in the NHL, like, how do you start to figure out how to break things up and where, you know, your coach's strengths are and letting him take parts, pieces of it and all of that. Like when you're trying to, you know, just deal with players, knowing when to let them go for it and when you need to step in, something like that. I've always been really curious about how you break that up.
Well, yeah, that's why you use good question again. We were spending time together.
Don't compliment him on his questions.
No, you keep going. I love it. This is perfect.
Yeah, you know what? I like that we got sitting here, and you know, I'm obviously aware and know what great a coach he is, and you know, but we're sitting here and we have discussion, talk about plays. We'll watch video. We'll watch other teams and different situations, and hear each other talk and get to know each other. And what's great is we're all sitting here for a few days just locked in here watching and having discussion, and you get to really know guys' strengths, and guys will open up. Like you put the right people in place. There's guys that are better at other things than other guys, and it's that simple. But we're, you know, I trust them. Like he's bringing in great stuff. He's strong. I really liked what Evison said when I talked to him about Brett. And I knew Brett from when he played, and I know he played in Cologne in his history, and I met him a lot. So, but I respected him, how he cares about his person. But I really liked what Evison said about his presence. He wouldn't have no trouble running a power play when you have a strength of MacKinnon or Crosby that you have to show him, hey, let's try this. And that really hit home for me like that. And I really liked how Evison said he had that strength, because you need to, you know, it's a relationship with the players, but you also need to, you know, as a power play coach or as a PK coach, there's times where you just go, okay, we're going this way, you know.
So actually, Adam, Landon brings up a really good point about how did you decide on who you decided on as assistants? How did that process occur? And did you know everybody implicitly when their names first came on a piece of paper to you?
Yeah, I you know what? I didn't know Dean as well as the others. Like I knew of him, knew, you know, as a person. Like, I've never met him. I've never met him in the game. But, you know, it was funny. We were laughing in here. His family came into town and we got to know each other even more. But I think I called him almost every day that he was at the World Championship. His wife was kind of giving me a little bit of trouble for that. But, I liked him. So, you guys know your relationships. I think that's huge, right? There's a lot of great hockey minds in the game at all levels, and the relationships are very big. I just, like I said earlier with him, loved who he's been around, you know, the Boston days. And then, you know, I know Luke Richardson really well, and you know, Seth Jones and Forbes, who's on our team. And I was almost like Forbes and Seth said the same thing about this guy. So it was really all positive. And you know, and Brett, obviously I knew him and I tried to get him when I was in Kelowna, actually, but he was going to Iowa. So, but yeah, love him a lot. And then Scotty.
Well, you and Scotty played together, right?
Yeah, Scotty Young and I came in together and it was just kind of like, kind of what happened with me. He was ready with his family to coach again, where he was a BU and I, you know, Quinn tried to grab him. And when he was going to the Rangers, he's won at every, he's won everything. And I know who exactly how he is. He's going to be great for our guys, you know, out on the ice, or just, I call him the glue guy. You know what I mean? Like this mending and the relationship guy, but also this guy could score goals. This guy had a hell of a shot and played with Sakic and, you know, he's been in the game a long time. So I really like the staff.
So I'm curious, cause you talk about like Scott Young, when he played for those Avalanche teams, glue guy's the right answer. I mean, sure, Forsberg and Sakic could do lots of stuff, and obviously you guys on the blue line were spectacular, but there was it was the depth players that made the difference, right? And that's what happens with every team now. It's the depth players that make the difference, right?
Yeah, and you're right. And he could defend. Like, he could play on the wall. You know, if you look at a lot of young forwards that come in the league, or a lot big games, where do you get in trouble, you know, on those rims, or you know, the deep pinching and things like that. And I always remember him being such a good wall player, which, you know, his techniques, and, you know, it was fun listening to him in here. We showed a lot of that video on purpose. We were like, we had to keep getting better. Talk was really good at teaching it, like, you know, the Sedins, but we had to really keep harping on those little details and his experience through so many big games and big championship games. I thought he was that line, St. Louis, we won but that series against St. Louis, right. I really felt, no disrespect to the goaltending, but I felt like they had our goalie and we had theirs, they would have won. And Scott was on that top line there as well, played in some big games, but he can defend. He can play, I call it, in the dirt or the muck, dots the boards, which is very underrated part of hockey. I mean, it ramps up in the big games. It ramps up in playoffs. So he knows how to be in those areas.
So you talked to Dean Evason, obviously you talked to Rick Tocchet after you got the job, or while you were on the verge of getting the job. Who else did you talk to about the process of becoming a head coach?
I was lucky. I mean, Jim and Patrick helped me a lot throughout it and gave me some heads up and introduced me to a lot of guys. But I really enjoyed it. It was long hours on the phone and open relationships, but it was so nice for me to get to talk to Claude Julien about a coach, you know, and get to know him, or, you know, call some of these coaches that I respect in the league, you know. And there's many, many coaches I called and talked to and you know, see and get to learn from them, like hear what they look for, and you know, the common theme to all of it was, one, you use your instincts, right? Mm-hmm. And two, the relationship part, you'll know, right? And I felt like we're going to be working long hours together, you know, and the relationship part matters a lot, obviously.
I mean, I guess another part I've always wondered about is, you know, like going back to you starting your playing career and, like, you know, you're just about to play your first game, like the days leading up to it or whatever. And like, you know, did you have a moment of like, before you've got your gear on now and you're like, this is actually happening? Like I had that before my first game. Is it still the same? Like, you know, now you're a head coach in the NHL. Was there a moment a couple days after you get named, or maybe it's right when you do, where you're like, oh, like this is actually happening? Like,
yeah, for sure. There's a couple times where you're like, maybe since this happened, there's been a couple times where I went, yeah, this is happening here. Like, whoa, okay. You know, but that's just like anything, right? It's like when you play, when you get a chance to play the game, you do your preparation and the work you put into it, so that when you get on that, in that position, or you say your first game and the puck drops, you're prepared. You've gone through the process. You've put the time, the work in, and you have the belief. So that's kind of how we actually want to run it to our leadership group. And, you know, exactly like that. So, yeah, there's been a couple of moments when, wait a minute.
You don't have to run it by the head coach anymore.
I kept going down to my office down the hall.
I'm curious. You talked about leadership group. Obviously, the perception is that you and Quinn Hughes have a very good relationship. These 2 years coming up, two seasons coming up, are going to be an amazingly focused year for you, for him, and for fans who are always going to be concerned about where Quinn's going to go after this contract. How do you manage that on a daily basis with Quinn Hughes, because there is such a high expectation?
Well, it was where we met and had that conversation. It's like my job, I'm as head coach, I'm coaching the team, and it's about the team. And Quinn knows that. And we had a great conversation about it where, you know, I'm going to keep, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm, every day that I look at it, I'm teaching him everything I know, or how to, for him to be a leader, or help him to prepare for the playoffs or that game seven. And whether the outcome part, I don't think about that. It's, he's here, for, he's got a 2-year contract, coaching every game, game by game. And he's aware of that. We had that conversation, and that's just who I am. Like, and if, you know, you're going to win, it's not about one guy. And obviously he's a big piece. He's our captain, you know, but, you know, I pretty much told him I'm just going to roll how I roll, Quinn. He knows me and, you know, do my job. And you're here, you know, you extend a shift in the second period for minute 30, and I'm going to snarl at you. It's not because of anything except because I want to win and teach you. So we had a real clear understanding and discussion. And yeah, we do have a good relationship, but I like the way it's really open book, and he can come to me. That's the way it should be. And when I was fortunate to have some good winning teams, it was real. You could have those talks and communicate.
Who does he have a ceiling, Adam? Does he have, I mean, every time you see him play, there's always, whether it's the amount of ice time he makes, or the plays he makes and what he does on special teams. What more can this guy do?
Well, I would never, a guy like that, or, you know, been around, like I said, a lot of these great players. And I don't know if I would ever think that they would have a ceiling. I think because of their work ethic, their athletic ability, it's just, there's this, I don't know what the right word is, but he's a special player, like a Forsberg, a Sakic, and they'll do something. You just look down the bench and go, did you see that? And so I can't say that I could pinpoint a ceiling for him, because he's the type of person, he just wants to win. He'll work out his game and keep getting better and better.
Go ahead, Landon.
I'll just say, you know, when you look at how your team wants to play, and, you know, like, coaches always have kind of keywords and things like that. Like, you know, obviously work hard is, that's across the board. You have to do that if you're going to be able to compete. Like, what do you think that next word or piece would be for your message to your team of how you want to go about your business?
Well, group, team, you know, we've been discussing a lot about this. For me, it's, for me with this group, what a podcast. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
For me, it's the process. So what I mean by that is get this leadership group to, you know, help every young guy become a real close team, that you put the work in together, you hold each other accountable so that we can adjust without confusion to what our opponent's doing or what we want to adjust to. When the game gets maybe not our way, a few bad bounces, we're not going to, you know, make it feel like we have a disaster on our hands. We're going to stay in control. And so I would say prepping these guys to go into battles that if the battlefield changes, we're ready to adjust as a group without going rogue. So, like, be unified as a team, I would say. And that changes in minutes of the game. It can change day to day, but we don't have to change. And what I mean by the process is we'll start, like, this is, we hold each other accountable, that leadership group, just holding each other accountable so that when we have those hard moments, we know how to handle them without panic.
How concerned are you about Elias Pettersson?
I had a great conversation. He came down from Sweden and met with Hugi and Demmer and went out and played some golf with them. And, you know, he's driven to, you know, put all that behind him and move forward. So I think we had a great couple of days together. We've been in communication and I'm excited to see where he's at, you know, his body and his where he's at in September.
I tell you, tell him to come to my house because I can put pounds on very quickly for him. finally, so here we are. We're at the end of June. What do the next 2 months look like for you before training camp starts in September?
Yeah, we continue to do, you know, work with our coaching staff, how we're going to play and you know, communicate with the players throughout this. We'll be having our talks with our leadership group and connecting with all players. Our assistant coaches will be, you know, they're new. They're going to be making a lot of calls, but just getting ready for camp and being in communication with our players and coaches. And we continue that throughout the summer.
Well, thank you for this, Adam. I know that it's a busy time of year and it's great that you gave us some time.
Okay. I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Vancouver Canucks head coach Adam Foote. Landon and I'll be back after this on 100% Canucks. Landon, there is something, I guess I would describe it methodical in the way that Adam likes to talk. And I wonder if that's the way, in a direct way, he likes to coach as well.
It sure sounded like it. You know, I think the one thing that really stuck out to me is like he still has that defensive mentality of how he wants to attack games. You could see where the pride that he takes in shutting down other teams, doing the work beforehand to make sure you understand how they want to play, how they attack, how they defend, and try and find those holes to start exploiting. Like you could see where, you know, as much as obviously he's a coach now, that player mentality is still in there of taking pride in shutting down good opponents.
All right. So we had a good session with him. We haven't talked since the acquisition of Evander Kane. What does that do for Vancouver?
I mean, it adds, you know, a good amount of size and speed up front. And, you know, if you look at the team and how they played last year and, you know, if we just zero in on Quinn Hughes, essentially, you know, like there were some extra liberties taken with him, you know, during the play on forechecks, taking good runs at him between whistles, trying to, you know, get him off his game because he's, you know, we all know what he can do and how he influences a game. You know, Kane is a guy that, you know, from the time he was 10 years old playing at North Shore Winter Club, he's not someone that's going to let that fly. And, you know, so he brings that toughness to the team, but he's also, you know, when he's healthy and at his best, like he's one of the premier power forwards in the league. The way that he can fight through the tough areas of the ice, protecting the puck, but still keeping it in a position to be able to make a play where so many other guys, when they get to those tough areas, having to fight through, you know, the puck gets a little bit deeper in their feet. They're trying to protect it and just kind of survive to the other side of the battle. He's one of those players that can blow through the battle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, thinking about him playing with some of, you know, whether it's Pettersson or whoever, like the space that he can open up and give them that breath of fresh air of, okay, like he's, you know, Kane has done his job. He's blown the first defenseman out. He's got me the puck. I now have an extra second with it on my tape. Now I can let my abilities take over as well. And hopefully those kind of start highlighting everyone else's and helping them move along as well.
Is it important that he's a Vancouver kid?
I think it is. You know, like this organization over the past, you know, while has, you know, they've had some ups and downs. They've had some
they also
obviously
had kids
some
from
drama.
Vancouver come back and haunt them. Like Duncan Keith, who played and grew up in Penticton, haunted them. Brent Seabrook haunted them. All these BC kids went to the rest of the National Hockey League and drove Canuck fans nuts.
Well, because everyone loves to play against their hometown team, right? Like you come back in, you have a ton of family there. I'm like, Like, I barely made it a year and I got a goal and an assist when I came to play the Canucks. Like, that was the best game I ever had. So to now be able to put on the jersey and all those memories of watching them as a kid and having all your idols, you know, he mentioned a couple of them in his press conference the other day of, you know, like watching Naslund and the Sedins and Bertuzzi and Donald Brashear. Like, those are all memories that when he puts on the jersey, like, those come flooding back to you. I did it for a training camp here in Vancouver, and I didn't think it was going to be as big of a deal as it was, but I remember putting on that blue for the first time and I'm like, okay, this is pretty cool. And my energy levels go through the roof. So I think for Kane, especially later in his career now, he's got kids of his own. His family's here. Like, he's going to be a very motivated player. And you can't, there's no way to buy that from a player. Like, it's their hometown. It's a completely different thing.
By the way, you know, Evander's a polarizing guy. We know that he's a polarizing guy, but if he plays the way I think he can play, he could become a fan favorite very quickly. Very quickly.
And I think that's, you know, like, it's one of those, you hate to play against him, you love to have him on your team. Mm-hmm. And again, like, it didn't seem like there was really any issues in Edmonton.
No,
the guys seemed to like him. And, you know, again, like, he's going to be 34 this summer and he's got kids now, he's matured. And I think the opportunity of playing at home, you know, he's going to want to put his best foot forward both on and off the ice. And when he does what he does on the ice, the first time someone tries to go after Hughes or Pettersson and he steps in, I think fans' switches are going to flip pretty quick.
Tell you what, with a couple of the guys that are on this club that can contribute, like Kane, like Dakota Joshua, this could be a fun team to watch. This could be a really fun team.
Don't forget Kiefer Sherwood in there too.
No, but there's two. I mean, Sherwood and Garland, to me, they're like water bugs compared to what Kane and Joshua supposed to be. Okay, you talked about Kane's favorite players as a kid. Who were your favorite Canucks as a kid?
Well, I mean, I moved to Vancouver in 02. Okay. So the 02-03 season.
You were the Brendan Morrison. You were the was it West Coast Express boys.
West Coast Express. And I mean, it was, you know, it was pretty funny. Like, Dan Cloutier was the goalie and, you know, he did his thing. He ended up being at Detroit camp, my very first camp with Todd Bertuzzi. So it was like, for me as a 10-year-old watching them to my first camp, now I'm shooting on one and trying to work my way to get to a 2-on-1 with Bertuzzi. Like, those were the guys. And that, you know, Naslund, watching him shoot a puck, you know, not that I ever got to that point, but man, I spent a lot of hours in my garage shooting, trying to figure out how I could get my snapshot to go off like his. It was beautiful. Like, it's something that there's, you know, a few guys that come along, you know, every few years that you see release a puck. And he was one of those guys of, like, that just looks different coming off.
Well, just for the record, my favorite guys were Andre Boudria and Bobby Schmotz. But that was at a different time and place in the history of the Canucks, long before you moved back to Vancouver in 2000.
Yeah, I would say that's fair to say.
In fact, my Bobby Schmotz hockey card from 1978 still exists. So
I played with I believe it was his nephew at Burnaby Winter Club.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, so I got a little crash course in him when we first moved here.
Bobby Schmotz would fit in with Evander Kane and Dakota Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
This was fun, Landon. And thanks to Adam Foote for joining us on this edition of 100% Canucks. We will have another edition sooner than later.